Hello and welcome to our blood chemistry thyroid section. I'm excited to share this because this is one of the sections. The thyroid testing is, it's one of the most confusing for our Western medicine type practitioners who've been trained conventionally. And there's some holes in the way they've been taught to look at thyroid, and they miss a lot. And I want to share with you ways that you can be really thorough in your testing of thyroid so your clients can actually get results instead of thinking, oh, you're fine, take some Prozac. So before we begin, this information is not intended to replace a one-on-one relationship with a qualified medical professional. It's not medical advice, and it never is. And you especially have to be careful when you're dealing with something like thyroid, and people are very likely to say, oh, you're diagnosing me with hypothyroidism or Hashimoto's or something. And that's not what we're doing. You're actually just giving them, again, what's out of balance, what can they do to correct it. This is a picture of the spreadsheet, and it's the main things we're looking at are TSH, total T4, which also is listed on the form as thyroxin. People get confused with the way these are listed. I'll tell them to get free T3, and it comes back and it says free triiodothyronine in parentheses free, and they have no clue. Well, why, how would they know? So I tried to, the updated version of the spreadsheet actually has these spelled out so you can actually see what everything is. It's much easier to put them in because it can be confusing. This is total T4. That's what does the thyroid produce. We always want to find out what's the thyroid producing. Is the problem a thyroid problem, or is the problem somewhere else? And oftentimes people are diagnosed with thyroid problems when the problem is not the thyroid. It's the immune system, it's the conversion, it's the peripheral receptors. So we want to be able to look at this and know what we really need. In my humble opinion, I believe what I want to know is, what's the thyroid producing? Number one. What are the cells seeing? Number two. So that's total T4, free T3. And then I want to know, is there anything attacking it? Thyroid peroxidase antibodies, antithyroglobulin antibodies. So if I had to just choose a few, those are the ones I would choose. If I had to bring it down to three, I would do the TPO, thyroid peroxidase, because 80% of people with autoimmune thyroid disease have it, the TPO. But you'll miss the other 20%. If you don't do both. So those are the tests I like to do, because sometimes the doctors will just do the free T3. Well, then I don't know whether the problem is the thyroid's not producing enough or not converting enough. And the conversion doesn't just happen in the thyroid, it happens in the peripheral tissues, in the liver and in the gut, mainly some in the kidneys. So I want to know those things minimally. Ideally, we have the whole picture. So ideally we have the total T4, the free T4, the total T3, the free T3, the reverse T3, the TSH, and the antibodies. That would be my ideal. In an ideal world, that would make me real happy. But it gets expensive, so we try to cut it down. But did you notice that I didn't even mention TSH as my top three? Why? Because the TSH is produced by the pituitary. And the pituitary has to work hard in order to get the thyroid to make hormone. And that's not usually where the problem lies. So yes, TSH is important. Yes, it's a good thing to be looking at. But I think that you also have to be looking at the downstream metabolites. TSH will be elevated when first the hypothalamus has to detect that there's low level of T4 or T3 in the bloodstream. And it says, oh, we're getting low. Pituitary, you know, go do your job and beat the thyroid up to make more hormone. So it detects the levels to be low, and it stimulates the pituitary. The pituitary says, whoops, okay, come on, thyroid. And it stimulates it to produce. And it gets the feedback, too. So as it gets up to speed, it slows itself down. And then that's it. We know once the levels get up, it stops producing. But then when the levels keep going higher and higher and higher, it means that the thyroid's not responding. So the TSH can be good when it's in those high levels. Generally speaking, when the TSH gets really high, the T4 also gets really low. So it's really a matter of figuring out what's really going wrong. So these are the ones. There's some numbers here The newest research is talking about the fact that really the TSH should be between 1 and 2 to really catch it. Most of the labs still do like between 0.5 and 5.5, although some of them are now going down to 4.5. So they're missing a lot of people who have their thyroids are struggling. But the point is that most docs will just run the TSH. And if the TSH is too high, then they'll run T4. And they don't, most of them don't run T3 or free T3. The T4 is the inactive form of the thyroid hormone produced by the thyroid. And the levels, you know, between 6 and 12 are the ideal levels. The T3 uptake, I don't even look at. The T3 uptake is an indirect marker. It's a calculated marker. And they throw it in on all the tests, on like the CWP, the Comprehensive Wellness. It's supposed to be an indicator of how the free T3 is working. But I have not seen a correlation. So at first when I started doing some of this, I said, well, I'm going to run it and I'll compare the free T3 to the T3 uptake. I would not have been able to predict that free T3 being low in 90% of the cases. So I don't even look at the T3 uptake. It's there. The same thing with free thyroxine index. It's a calculated number. And it's like you're basically, both of those are guessing and kind of giving you an indication of what the free numbers might be. Why don't we just measure the free numbers? I really think it's important. The total T3, triiodothyronine, is what is converted from the T4 before it's activated. So let's just remind you, refresh with you, the difference between free hormones and protein bound. Your thyroid produces a protein bound, it produces the hormone and then it immediately gets bound to a protein. The protein that it gets attached to is called thyroid binding globulin. And I know it can be confusing because there's thyroid binding globulin and then there's also thyroglobulin. Thyroglobulin is actually the core of the thyroid molecule. It's that tyrosine core. Thyroid binding globulin is a protein that carries the thyroid hormone once it's created. So the thyroid produces the T4. So we've got the thyroid producing T4. It then gets combined with the thyroid binding globulin and carried around the system. The T4 is mostly inactive. When it needs to be activated, it gets converted to T3, and then it gets converted to free T3. With free T3 or free T4, you're pulling the thyroid binding globulin off and you're just getting a naked hormone. And that's what the cells see. The cells can't act on the ones that are protein bound. So you can see those numbers in the free ones are so much lower than the active, because the active ones are not going to be active until they get freed. And the free ones only last in the bloodstream a short while, right? Because it gets acted upon and gets used. When you don't do the total, you don't get to see if there's a binding globulin problem. And sometimes there's too much binding globulin. And the free T4 numbers or free T3s both are low because there's too much binding globulin. It's tying it up. That can happen when you've got too much estrogen in the system. The opposite of that is when there's too little thyroid binding globulin and you have really high levels of the free hormones. And that could give people symptoms of hyperthyroidism without actually showing it in terms of the TSH. And then the antibodies are just how much is the body shooting bullets at the thyroid. That's a complete test and we'll review this again. This is just the first pass. First, I want to talk about the different kinds of thyroid dysfunction and how these lab tests kind of tie together. You've got hypothyroidism, hyperthyroidism. Too little thyroid hormone, too much thyroid hormone. Sluggish, hair is falling out, depressed, hyperthyroidism, palpitations, a lot of sweating, excess hyperenergy. The autoimmune conditions, the main ones are Graves and Hashimoto's. Graves is an autoimmune thyroid condition of hyperthyroidism. And almost all hyperthyroidism is Graves. Hashimoto's is the autoimmune condition where the manifestation is primarily hypo. Although with Hashimoto's, you can sometimes get flares where you get increased thyroid function followed by the decreased. Subclinical thyroid conditions are not really looked at much at all. The autoimmune ones are often overlooked, but there are a lot of docs who will run the antibodies, but they don't change their treatment protocol based on what they get. But subclinical ones are often ignored. So binding protein problems, you know, you look at women on birth control pills where their estrogen levels are high, or hormone replacement, they can have low thyroid function because of the problem with the binding globulins. You also have thyroid receptor resistance. So the receptors, right, the receptors are just not picking up the free T3. You may have perfect numbers, but you still have symptoms. You're going to see people like that. Don't write them off as crazy or having mental disorders or being a hypochondriac. They probably have receptor resistance, and it's a very common thing to have happen when someone is in a state of a lot of stress, because the cortisol will interfere with that. When a person has a lot of inflammation in their body and they have other autoimmune diseases other than thyroid, it also is really common when somebody is vitamin A deficient or has high levels of homocysteine. So it's a common problem, and it's just not really addressed very much. The other kinds of thyroid dysfunction is what's been labeled Wilson's temperature syndrome. And that's really where the conversion from T4 to T3 is very low. You have a buildup of reverse T3. The reverse T3 then clogs the thyroid receptors. And the more T4 you give that person, like Synthroid, which is the typical way of approaching it, the more that gets converted to reverse T3 and the worse they get. So you think you're giving them the right thing, or the doctors do. They think they're giving them the right thing. Well, they have all these thyroid symptoms. Let me give them T4. But it backfires, because really what they have is this excess reverse T3, and all their T4 is going to get converted to more reverse T3, zap the receptors, and then further zap that conversion. So it's like you've got to get in there and break the vicious cycle. And of course, there's thyroid cancer, and we're not going to talk about that. So the basic screen that you get from like Direct Labs, when you do the CWP, the Comprehensive Wellness, they include T4, which is thyroxine, total T4. They do three T3 uptake, which I think is kind of useless. Free thyroxine index, which they also call T7. Those are two are calculated. They're not really measured. And then TSH, that's your basic screen. I think out of the two, I like the TSH and the total T4. The extras that I think are essential, the thyroid peroxidase antibodies, the antithyroglobulin, the free T3, the free T4, total T3, you could do without. Reverse T3, you can wait on and only do it when it's necessary. So the bottom three, you can dispense with. The top three are imperative. There's a whole bunch of medications that affect the thyroid. I'm not going to read them. You've got that as a reference list. But you really want to make sure that you do a good history with the person and find out, are they on medications that could be affecting their thyroid hormone numbers? So let's look at a couple of cases. And this should drive it home. So the first thing you should notice here is in orange, and it's the thyroid peroxidase antibody. It's 140. It should be less than 2. So 140 is not great. But a lot of doctors see these with 140. They go, oh, that's nothing. It's not a problem until it goes over 500. It's a problem to have bullets shooting at your thyroid. Whether it's one bullet or 140 of them or 3,000 of them, it's a problem. So 140 is definitely something that needs to be addressed. The other things we tested here was the TSH, and it was 2.5. That would, if we didn't do the antibodies in this person, right, and just sent them for the standard panel, and it was a functional doctor even, right, and they said, oh, we're going to do, so we're going to do the ranges that are better. You know, we have to have it be under 3. This would have been totally missed as a thyroid problem, and this person discounted. Oh, the TSH is fine. It's even within the functional range. The thyroid hormone, yeah, it's 6.7. It's in the ideal range. It's at the low end, but it is. Everything looks good. If we didn't do that thing, we would have missed that this person had an autoimmune disease, and we wouldn't have caught it until the antibodies did enough damage that we would see a change in those numbers. So this person could be going on with this autoimmune disease for years. And believe me, I've seen lots of patients this way. A lot. A lot of places where it was missed. One of the things I want you to be really keen on is to know that when you have someone and you test them and their TSH is up and down and up and down and up and down, you got to look at antibodies. It could be the antibodies that are doing that. Okay, that's something that you just want to keep in mind, because they see a lot of people missed in the doctors. They say, oh, yeah, the doctor said my TSH was 7 and he wanted to put me on thyroid medication. And I said, I don't want to go on it. Let's wait and see. And then in 3 months, it was down to 2.8, and then it was up to 6.7. You're like, this can be a job for good old autoimmune process or intervention. Okay, so here's another thyroid case. Look at these numbers. The TSH is out of ideal range, 4.08. Okay, so it starts backwards. So it's 3.33 in 06, 3.964 in 08, and 4.08. So it's consistently getting higher. Now, if you were a conventional medical doctor, you would think that these numbers were fine, and you wouldn't even pay attention to the fact that they're consistently getting higher. The thyroxine looks perfectly fine at 7.5. The free thyroxine index is 29. Okay, that's the only things they measured. And they had one place where they measured the free T4, and it was fine. But they didn't measure the antibodies. So you've got to follow up with getting those antibodies. Why is that TSH up like that? What's going on? You got to get the free T3 to see. Is there a conversion issue? Is there a binding globulin issue? Here's another case. This person goes in, she's got a 1.38. That's considered a perfectly normal TSH. Okay? And that's even considered now these days by functional doctors to be a perfectly normal TSH. So all this stuff, yeah, no problem. Look at the antibodies. Not terrible. But there's definitely antibodies there. Let's clear up those antibodies. Because we have TSHs low, maybe this is an autoimmune Graves type disease. And so you can also do another set of antibodies called TSI. Don't use them, do them very often. But if this person also was saying, I'm jittery, I'm losing weight, then we might do these TSI antibodies. If this person's saying, I'm sluggish, I keep gaining weight, I wouldn't bother, at least initially. So what do you do to support it? There's a lot of nutrients that are important. Iodine is critical because it's what makes the thyroid hormone. So I really take exception to this iodophobia, which is don't take iodine, it's bad, it's going to aggravate Hashimoto's. How's your body going to make thyroid hormone if there's no iodine? It needs 4 iodines to make T4. It needs 3 to make T3. How are you going to do it without iodine? So I think there was some hullabaloo over some studies that were done in Japan, and it showed that people who eat a lot of seaweed and had a lot of iodine were having higher incidence of Hashimoto's. But the bottom line is too much versus enough versus not enough. And you can't try to prevent somebody from getting too much by putting them in a state of not enough. We want to be in the state of enough. And so we test. You do an iodine load test, you look at their symptoms, you pay attention, you give them the iodine, and if you see their thyroid numbers get better, you know that that's working. You have to be a detective. So don't get into this whole iodophobia, and if you have Hashimoto's, you can't take it. Right, you can't take excess amounts. You go carefully. But Hashimoto's can be attributed to low iodine as well. The other nutrients that are super important for thyroid are selenium, zinc, iron. Those are 3 minerals that are super important. Selenium helps the conversion of T4 to T3, as does iodine. So here's the deal that a lot of research is starting to point to, is that the problems with iodine come in when the person is deficient in selenium. So you supplement them with selenium. Actually, you give them a couple, 2 to 4 Brazil nuts every day, unless they have fat absorption problems, and then you can give them selenium. But I'd rather get it from food. Zinc is super important for a number of those enzyme reactions, as is iron. Tyrosine is the amino acid that binds together with iodine to make thyroid hormone. Now, years ago, people would just say, oh yeah, you have a thyroid problem, let's just give you iodine and tyrosine. And that may not work if you don't have all the other cofactors. So it's not like, oh, just give somebody iodine and tyrosine and the body knows how to make it. Has to have all those enzymes working properly in order to make the thyroid from iodine and tyrosine. I mean, sometimes it's like you just stick, if you were to put iodine and tyrosine in a petri dish together, it's not going to form thyroid hormone. Some of the nutrients that are important, vitamin A is super important for those receptors. So if you have somebody who you suspect the receptor resistance, they may not be converting their beta carotene to vitamin A efficiently. They may not be getting enough beta carotene or vitamin A. So you really got to look at that. And some people have to be supplemented with vitamin A. The vicious cycle is that we need the vitamin A in order to be able to make thyroid hormone. And if we don't make enough thyroid hormone, the conversion from beta carotene to vitamin A is not good. Vitamin D is very important for the thyroid, very important especially if there's autoimmunity. But there's some B vitamins like B2, B6, and B12 that are super important for making thyroid hormone, as well as the bioflavonoids, those antioxidant, anti-inflammatories. So let's just talk a little bit about the autoimmune, because I know it's come up, and it always comes up, and we'll go into more detail in our thyroid module. But basically, you've got to support the immune system, because Hashimoto's isn't a thyroid problem. It becomes a thyroid problem after the attacking goes on for a while. But really, the root is in the immune system, and that's what we have to look at. So you need to support the immune system. We'll talk way more about TH1s and TH2s in the actual thyroid module. You need to avoid gluten and allergy-containing foods. In my experience, 100% gluten avoidance is mandatory for recovery. And if somebody has Hashimoto's and they're not willing to do that, I just send them on their way. I say, I can't help you. Then there's the essential fatty acids, the omega-3s, the EPA, the DHA, super important. Blood sugar balance is super important. I've helped people to get their blood sugar balance and their Hashimoto's goes away. That's not everybody because there's sometimes other things, factors. Repairing the gut is mandatory because those antibodies that leak into the bloodstream or those food particles create an autoimmune reaction that can attack. Of course, decreasing stress and supporting the adrenals, critical for Hashimoto's and other thyroid problems. Increase the vitamin D. It should be closer to 100 when you have the autoimmunity. And then really consider these antioxidants like glutathione and glutathione-enhancing foods and nutrients, things that convert into glutathione, like N-acetylcysteine, for example. And then turmeric, ashwagandha, CoQ10, Romania, these have been phenomenal. There was a study that took people with Hashimoto's and they put them on 400 micrograms a day of selenium plus Romania, which is a Chinese herb. And they did, you know, a few other things, I think, to clean things up. But that was the main thing. And within that time period, the stuff normalized. The antibodies normalized. Really amazing. And they also gave selenium with that. I think I said that. So vitamin D is super important. I just gave you that same chart that you had in the other one. Only really want to keep it in the 90 to 100. I think these are pretty much the same. You've got it. What are some of the thyroid resources and books that I like? There's the Karazian, Why Do I Still Have Thyroid Symptoms When My Lab Tests Are Normal? Great in terms of Hashimoto's and in terms of the receptor burnout. And then you've got Dr. Brownstein, Overcoming Thyroid Disorders, and also the Iodine book. Really enlightening. Lots of great research in there. Thyroid Health, 10 Steps to Total Health by Shamus and their husband-wife team. That talks about the whole thyroid resistance thing. That's the end of our thyroid class.